We, by joining the work in the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, we got, so to say, an extended and a strengthened perspective on our own situation in Europe. This similarity, which we feel, we're trying to work on in theory and practice within our own organizational work. But we'd also try to, in a sense, mediate in this work that there is probably one sort of difference in our situation, and that's exactly the fact that we are living in Europe. And the fact that we have been exposed to European colonialism in an internal sense for all historic time, and that means at least 2,000 years. There might be a map. I don't know whether it is distributed here.
There is a map of Scandinavia that it would be useful to have to follow what Alf Isaac is going to say. I think there are some copies over there. Don is just going to get them. We might think, Don, about getting a map of Canada for this afternoon, and a map, the map of Australia that we have might be distributed as well this afternoon. But are those maps of Scandinavia? Well,
okay, I think I can go on. Well, this is a map of the northern part of Europe. You will see a broken line draw on the map. North of this broken line is the present Sami habitat. That is the land that is now in traditional use for reindeer breeding, hunting, fishing, and which we regard as the land base for our people today. You'll also see a marked area up in the north, close to the Arctic coast in the inland, that comprises 5 administrative units in Norway and Finland, well, where there is presently a majority of the Sami population. We can say that it is a sort of demographic refuge for the Sami population today, for several historical and contingent reasons. That refuge is how it is. In all the rest of the area, the Sami population is a minority, some places a very small minority. For instance, in the south, consisting of family units doing reindeer breeding in the traditional area. One of the essential features of the situation of the Sami people is that we live in 4 countries. And despite this fact, we feel as one people. The Sami population today consists of maximally 40,000 people in Norway, 17,500 in Sweden, 5,000 in Finland and 2,000 persons in the Soviet Union. We regard ourselves as one people despite living in several different national states. We regard our land area as being our traditional ancestral land. We call it the Sápmi. And the Sápmi, in fact, is an area which crosses those national borders in the north. There is several ways in which we could try to go closer into the problems that relate to our people. First of all, I have to mention that there has been a considerable debate in the broad public in Scandinavia as for the reality of the aboriginality of the Sami people. The fact that we have been living together with four big nations constantly encroaching upon our traditional area, and in a way we could say stealing our historical base or stealing our history by not making it explicit in their educational system, for instance. There has during the decades been growing up a notion in the Nordic countries that nobody really knew for sure who came first to the area. So an elementary and a first part of the struggle for Aboriginal Sami rights has been to convince ourselves by access to the knowledge that still was prevailing in our people and which had been to some extent been preserved by researchers and scientists in the Nordic countries and abroad, to the factual or to the fact that we really were the first people in the north. So we had to concentrate on this fact. So we were able to convince ourselves that we had the right to speak of Aboriginal rights in any case. There is nowadays a very broad consensus about the fact that the Sami people descends from the Paleolithic or Stone Age dwellers of the Arctic region of Northern Europe. This is clearly confirmed by experts like, for instance, Professors Ernulf Warren at the University of Tromsø, Professor Emeritus Israel Ron at the University of Uppsala, the professor of archaeology Paul Simonsen at the University of Tromsø, and the professor of human genetics at the University of Umeå in Sweden, which says in fact that the Sami population contains or possesses a genetical pool which confirms that it is the original population in Northern Europe, and in fact has become like it is today by staying in that area since all time humans have been staying in Northern Scandinavia since the last glacier melted away around 18,000 years ago. There is then a considerable evidence that our ancestors have been hunters and fishers, utilizing the present Sami land for a period approaching 10,000 years in Northern Europe. The fact that there has never been organized Sami national state on a larger scale, and there haven't been organized any superimposed structure of organizing the Sami people until recent decades, have made it possible for the national states of the Nordic area to occupy, to encroach upon Sami lands, divide it between themselves, and deprive us of the possibility to do what we always had done in the land, to use it as we wanted to use it, or to protect it from external encroachment. It's possible I can envisage that what I'm saying now sounds a little strange in the global Aboriginal perspective, but this is how, in fact, we have to speak on the European scene in order to convince, for instance, the politicians of the majority peoples that we have a historical right, that we have an historical aim also for what we want to do. And probably I have to go on speak a little in this manner. There is, of course, a very complex historical development in the region of the north. The Norwegian kings, the Viking kings, started to fortify the coast of the north, which was not then, of course, Norway. The king Håkon Håkonsson succeeded in fortifying an island in the 13th century, which is now called Vardø. And in the same century after that, the Swedish kings allowed Karelian bands, or let's say Karelian looters, to go northwards from the Botnia area to tax the Sami people. And there was an interest conflict between Denmark-Norway, Sweden, which then comprised Finland, and the Russian Empire, which had started growing at that point from the 14th century, to gain access to the northern part of Europe with its rich fur trade, with the possibilities of transportation along the ice-free Arctic coast to the White Sea. The Sami area got involved in a sort of struggle between minor and bigger European powers. it happened for a period of at least 300 years, from the 1300s to the beginning of the 1600s, that several groups of Samis had to pay tax three times a year, once to every different country that claimed tax. And the tax consisted mostly in the products that were very valuable for continental Europe at that time, like, for instance, fur from the hunting and trapping activity of the Sami people. There are a lot of historical dates and years that should be mentioned, but in this connection I think it will carry too far to go into detail at this point of time at least. I would only like to mention that throughout the whole Sami area the land use was regulated by customary Sami law. The land was divided into what were called sidas, which were used by related groups, each having their own council for regulating the land use, which also had a sort of court function and a function to regulate the land use in relation to neighboring sidas. There are reports of how such regulations did happen, and an example can be cited, for instance, that if a trapper or a hunter from a neighboring sida came into a sida area and hunted and trapped there, he was fined by the Sida Council, not to a very severe extent, but merely in the sense that he had to give half of his catch to the Sida in which area he had been hunting without permission. In the Kemi Sami area, north of the Botnia, there is even evidence that the Sida councils, which functions as courts, also were permitted by the Swedish kings to judge or pass judgment in matters where trappers, Swedish or Finnish trappers, got into the Sami area. They could find them or expel them if they hunted illegally inside the area. Well, this hunting, trapping and fishing economy started to develop in different directions from the 1500s onwards. We started getting the tendency to domestication of reindeer breeding. Domestication of reindeer, which is now consistent throughout the area I've been trying to show on the map here, and which consists in, for instance, the regular or annual cycle use of land, moving in a migratory pattern from inland to coast, and in some areas across state borders. There has been also a differentiation into some agriculture in the inland area combined with inland water fishing, and in the north at the coast, ocean fishing, and in earlier days whaling and sealing, hunting of seal have been considerable economic factors. Of course, this situation of a more or less free use of the Sami land by the Sami population couldn't prevail in Europe. One can imagine that when we get as far up in history as the 1700s. In 1751, there was made a border treaty between Norway and Sweden, which defined a strict national border between the two countries in all its length. So one, in a way, it is interesting to note that neither in Europe has all European area been under a definite national state control for more than a little more than 200 years, in fact. The colonial process went on in an internal sense in Europe, and precisely in the northern Europe. And of course, one can say that the same type of process has been taking place in the Siberian areas of the same continent as I come from. So the colonial process is, in a sense, more universal or more worldwide than one thinks may think of at the first moment. Well, the border treaty of 1751 did contain a sort of appendix relating to Sami rights, in that the countries, Sweden and Norway, between themselves bilaterally obliged to recognize Sami rights and the rights of the Sami population to travel across the border and to bear the rights of fishing and hunting as before the treaty were effective. I shall try to be very short on the historical development preliminary for this time. I'll just note an interesting fact that the same year the border treaty was made, 1751, the northern province in Norway, where I come from, was made a sort of deportation area for criminals from the south. In a sense, we have some of the same development there that we have had in Australia. And this sort of deportation took place until 1842. In the last part of the 1700s, in 1775, there came a resolution by the king permitting the king to sell land in the north, in the Sami area, to private owners. And we get, in a way, the start of the legalization away of Sami rights by the passing of successive laws undermining the notion of an Aboriginal right, an Aboriginal title. In 1902, there was passed a law in Norway which prohibited the sale of land or entitling of land of two persons who did not or were not able to speak Norwegian. And that means that in formal legal terms, land could not be entitled to Samis if they did not speak Norwegian. And at that time, probably most Samis did only very poorly speak that language. And if I don't remember wrongly, the last land sale law relating to the northern province was passed in 1965 concerning the so-called unmatriculated government land in the north, which we regard as the Sami land, and which is also expressly stated in the Sami political program that was adopted at the Joint Sami Conference in 1980.
Is that a conference of Sami from all four countries?
Yes. I'll try to expand a little more on that later. But since 1980, the government has in fact in Norway gone even one step further by determining that the so-called unmatriculated land in the north should be matriculated to the government. So the result is now that all of the previously unmatriculated land is divided up into convenient areas, have got a number on them, and entered into the land book as government property number 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. This is very shortly some of the aspects of the question of land rights. But it isn't complete without trying to finally give a short picture of the organizational development of the Sami people in recent decades and of the development of the legal claims. The first organizational attempt in a modern sense was done in 1907 in the southern areas of the Sami. And successive developments took place in both Norway, Sweden, and Finland, resulting in 1953 a first joint conference with participation from Samis in all the three countries concerned. And since 1953, there has every third year been a joint Sami conference. And between the conferences, there is a permanent council working, which is called the Sami Radi, and has its secretariat in Ohtsjoka in Finland. The conference is formed by delegates from the Sami organizations in each country, and has in 1971 in Gällivare in Sweden adopted the comprehensive cultural policy program, and in 1980 Sami political program that is considered as being the effective statement of the joint Sami policy, and in a sense binding for the activity of the Sami organizations. I could just try very shortly to quote from this program. From the statement in section 2, the aims of Sami policy, which says, after a preamble, first, that Sami people receive legal protection as an indigenous people in each Nordic country. Two, that we receive legal protection for our traditional lands and natural resources in each Nordic country. Three, that the traditional livelihoods of Sami people be protected and laws be accordingly amended in each Nordic country. Four, that Sami language be recognized by law as an official language. Five, that Sami society and representative bodies be officially recognized. Six, that Sami language and culture be preserved and developed as a living language and living culture. Seven, that according to our own common traditions, we are able to maintain peaceful relations with our neighbors and support efforts in behalf of world peace. Also, this political program contains several more detailed perspectives. But before I conclude, I'd like to say that there has been a special development the last years in connection with a specific event that might be internationally known. And that is the development of the Alta River hydroelectric project plan. It's a fact that the hydroelectric project plan was enforced against the will of the local authorities, and especially against the express statement of the Sami organizations. In 1979 and 1981, there were severe demonstrations in the project area, and there were hunger strikes by Sami youth in Oslo. This resulted in the fact that the government of Norway had to start realizing plans or promises that it had given 20 years before in a special committee report in 1962-63. And there was erected two special committees, one for the clarification of Sami status and land rights, the Sami Rights Commission, also known as the Smith Commission. The other was a committee to clarify the further development within questions of language and culture. The former government of Norway, which was a Labour government, expressly promised that it would recommend a constitutional amendment in Norwegian constitution to get recognized the status of the Sami people as an ethnic indigenous group in Norway, and to promote the erection of a Sami census and an elected body which could be raised on the fact of such a registration of the Sami population. And we're in these weeks awaiting the first report of the Smith Commission concerning the constitutional and status questions. And the reports on land rights questions will follow in the closest years in the future. in Finland, there was already in 1972 elected a Sami parliament. That is, there was a probational election in 1972 based on a census that the Nordic Sami Council itself had arranged. Later in 1973, there was passed a presidential bill in Finland recognizing and structuring the registration of the Sami population in Finland and the elections of the Sami delegation, as it's officially called in Finland, or the Sami parliament, as it's called by ourselves. Yes. At the present time, I think that I should not go into more details, but only state that there is a definite perspective in the joint Sami organizational body. That land rights should be recognized, that there should be granted a status to the Sami people as a people in the Nordic countries and within each particular state, and that the Sami people should be allowed to erect representative bodies democratically elected among the Sami people to represent the interests of the people towards the authorities and internally in the people as such. Finally, I want to express on behalf of Aslak Nils Sara, who is principal of the Sami Institute and one of the two vice presidents of the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, the importance that is attached to the process of clarifying indigenous rights in this event, at this hearing, and in the former work that has been done by you, Mr. Berger, in Canada. And there is a definite wish from the Sami people that we'll be able to learn from this process in a way that can apply to our own situation, and that we feel a wish that the efforts of the Aboriginal peoples around the world can be seen in a unified perspective in some sense, that the world community and the large powers of the earth could be able to see that also this is a very important part of the struggle for human rights throughout the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cascatallo. We do appreciate that discussion of the history of Sami land claims and the movement for self-government. I think some around the table would like to ask some questions, but I would like to ask a couple. First of all, you said that the lands that the Sami use for hunting and fishing and reindeer herding are held by the government of Norway, government of Sweden, government of Finland, and so on. Did I misunderstand that? The lands that... Let us take the lands where you have reindeer herding going on. Who owns the land? That is, under Norwegian law, who is the landowner?
The present state of land ownership is, of course, then a result of the development. Originally, there was before... let's say the taxation period before the state started to tax in the north. There was, of course, no formulated pretension on behalf of the government that they owned the land. So it was, from any angle or point of view, Aboriginal land.
And the land use was governed by the Cedars?
The land use was governed by the Cedars, yes. But when the kings of the country started to tax the Cedars, that also involved the pretension that this, in some sense, was crown land and that it was held by the Samis as some sort of servants of the crown. And of course, When the Nordic states were transferred from, let's say, despotic kingdoms more into direction, development in democratic direction, when we, for instance, see that Norway got its own free constitution in 1814, then the title that more or less earlier had been seen as crown land more and more got turned into the concept of government land owned by the government or by the government for the people, in a sense. And this is also then reflected in the laws of land sale, more or less, 1775, 1902, 1965, and so on. What originally developed as a sort of despotic, monarchic way of doing things has developed into the legalization of a procedure that seems outwardly to be democratic because it's government land, government poured by the people, but in any way or in any case it's government by the people seen as a function of the majority dominant people, with no special status to the Sami group as such, except that the reindeer breeding is regulated through the Reindeer Breeding Acts. So reindeer breeding in itself is allowed on different types of land, from in the south, land that has become privately owned, mostly by Norwegian landowners, Norwegian peasants, and so on, through gradually northwards, different forms of government land, community land, to up in the north, the northernmost province, where almost all land is what was up to a few years ago defined as the unmatriculated government land, but which is now matriculated government land. But the existence of reindeer breeding on this land of different classification does not in itself, to my view at least, give any protection for the execution of a future reindeer breeding in the area. And it relates only to the activity of reindeer breeding and not to any form of exclusive activity aiming at consolidating and furthering the types of land use in hunting and fishing and so on that have been traditional to the Sami people, which are almost totally abolished by law. There is no exclusive right, at least not in Norway, for Sami hunting and fishing. There's no way in which the Sami population can be said to have a preferential right to hunting and fishing at large in the traditional area. And that is a consequence of the way the legal process has happened from a despotical king's way of writing bills towards the democratic government's way of writing bills. It's the same thing that happened.
Do the Sami have a preferential right to fish and game in any of the Scandinavian countries?
Yes, I think I can state that in the Swedish Reindeer Breeding Act, or acts in function now, there is a certain preference for reindeer breeders or reindeer breeders.